Chapter 5. Let the Good Times Roll.
There's more to life than work. In this chapter, we're going to talk about having a good time again. When's the last time you went out with your friends, went on a date, had a romantic night with your spouse? Now's the time to let go and reconnect with fun.
My guess is it's been so long since you prioritized entertainment, you've forgotten your old life when you used to go out and have a great time. Work is important, but the other equally important part of life is play. Nourishing your playful self is a surefire way to build a chronically happy life. You can have fun despite days filled with taking medication, going to physical therapy, feeling lousy, and in general, managing your disease. This may seem impossible, but I can attest it isn't. Before we get into strategies about how to seek pleasure again, let's explore your idea of fun and the reasons why it is important to keep it in your life. Fun? What's that? Discover what the word means for you. Everyone has a different notion of fun. Some people think it's zooming down a snow-covered hill on two planks of fiberglass at 100 miles per hour. Others think it's going to the yarn store to check out the latest colors in wool. Still others relish the thought of cozying up with a good book or video. It's important for you to take stock and decide exactly what fun looks like for you. You may be so sick and in so much pain that you literally can't remember what fun is. If this is the case, reach back into your memory banks and recall what you did to entertain yourself back then, before you got sick. Here are some questions to spark your synapses. What activity did you do that most relaxed you, that brought you the most peace? What activity did you do that most challenged you, that really pushed your limits? What's the best vacation you ever took? When was the last time you laughed? Really, really hard. What is the best party you ever attended? What's the most entertaining thing you've ever done? I know exploring how you used to have fun seems like a simple, maybe even a silly exercise, but really putting thought into these questions is very important. First, this kind of mind work helps you to remember what enjoyment is. When you live with a chronic illness, the unpleasant essentials of living, taking medications, going to dialysis, visiting the doctor, sleeping, you get the picture, tend to take over, making it easy to forget exactly how to eke the joy out of life. Next, answering these questions will help you to see that not every means of pleasure in your former life is off limits. Think about your answers to each of these questions. Could you do any of the things that brought you joy then, now? Perhaps you used to relax by strolling in the woods or soaking in a tub. Chances are these pleasures are still at your disposal. Even if you can do just one of the items on your list, why not bring it back into your life? The simple action of indulging in an old comfort has the ability to cover you in a plush blanket of worry-free memories, if only for a few moments. Redefining fun. The next step is to deconstruct your responses a bit so you can reconfigure your old ideal of fun. Look at your answers and consider the ones that you can't do anymore because of your illness. For instance, you may have written a food tour of Italy next to what was your best vacation. Right now, a food tour on another continent is probably a stretch. The one you took to Italy was fabulous, but you most likely won't be able to take the one to France anytime soon. Accept this fact and move on. I know it's hard. But try not to bemoan what you can't have. Instead, replace the old ideal with something realistic. If you live near Napa, perhaps you can plan a trip to a winery and a French restaurant, taking special precautions to prepare for the long day. Take a course on Parisian cooking at your local community college, altering the recipes to suit your dietary needs. If it's hard for you to leave the house, buy a French cookbook. I know these alternatives aren't as exciting as a trip to France, but they are still ways of having fun, of shifting gears from feeling sick to feeling pleasure. Fight the urge to compare your reconstructed version of entertainment with the rest of the world's. This woman suffers from chronic fatigue syndrome. I can barely manage my daily chores. Makes me angry that I can't do the fun things that others do. Hardly do anything extra anymore. Just don't have the energy. I find that I'm afraid to plan ahead for fear that I will not feel well when it's time to go to the party, theater, etc. Is there anything I can do? Or must I learn to accept the fact that sports, socialize, and travel are just fun in general are no longer possible with a chronic illness? The truth is, each of these modes of entertainment is still possible, just on different scales. Sports may mean joining a team that has players who also live with illness. Remember the woman who found a yoga class especially for people with chronic fatigue syndrome? Socializing may mean having people over on your terms rather than going out. And travel may mean day trips or short plane rides. While it's true your options are limited, please remember they aren't altogether gone.
The best way to cheer yourself is to try to cheer someone else up. Mark Twain.
No one is left out at this prom. Each year, I organize a prom for kids who suffer from kidney disease. This is a perfect example of taking an old ideal of fun and rejiggering it to fit a new set of needs. Many kids with serious kidney disorders are unable to attend school, or if they do, they often miss out on its social aspects. It can be hard for them to relate to their peers because they deal with life and death issues on a daily basis. Not wanting them to be left out of this important coming-of-age event like I was, I decided to throw them their own dance through my nonprofit group, the Renal Support Network. I held the first annual in the year 2000 and soon discovered, even though it wasn't the prom, it was better. Defined attendees, we forwarded invitations to all the pediatric facilities in the Los Angeles area. They, in turn, mailed the invitations to their teenage dialysis and transplant patients. Not knowing what type of evening today's teenagers would enjoy, I consulted several students from Notre Dame High School in Sherman Oaks, California. They lent a much-needed shot of cool in the decoration and activity planning. More than 24 volunteers worked through the weekend to prepare the Notre Dame cafeteria for the event. To create a Mardi Gras theme, we hung purple and blue crepe paper from one end of the room to the other and strung more than 600 balloons. We installed a dance floor and a disco ball, and the Notre Dame teens made colorful feather masks for each attendee. The teenagers began arriving at 5 o'clock, some in limousines, some in cars and vans. My heart began to race. I thought about the prom I'd missed because of illness. Now, I finally had a prom of my own to attend, and I was with a guy I actually liked, my husband, Dean. In a room adjacent to the dance area, volunteers helped the girls with their makeup and hair in preparation for a glamour photo. When I peeked into the room, I watched them wrapping feather boas around their necks and trying on different costume jewelry. Kids packed the dance floor as the DJ turned the tunes. A Michael Jackson impersonator ripped up the floor and later headed a conga line. A Ricky Martin lookalike performed a La Vida Loca. A kidney transplant patient jumped on stage with him and became part of the act. One young man, Jack Freeman, drove more than 100 miles with his parents to attend the event. Initially, not knowing what to expect, he was hesitant about staying beyond 7 o'clock. He had such a great time, though, He was the last one to leave. One of the teenage boys from Children's Hospital said, "I didn't know girls on dialysis could be so pretty." Toward the end of the night, I watched as the teens began to exchange their phone numbers and email addresses, and I realized I'd accomplished my personal mission: to give them a chance to connect with each other at an event where they are often denied admission. As the night ended, an 18-year-old kidney transplant recipient, Alan Bratland, told me this night made up for the fact that he hadn't been able to attend his school's prom. Before he left, he presented me with a white rose and thanked me for a very special evening. Every year, the number of attendees grows. Courageous teens and their guests come from all over the country for a carefree evening of normal coming-of-age activities. It reinforces that they're human beings who have a lot to contribute and a life worth living. Find new interests. As you remember how you used to have fun, be open to the idea that you may need to start fresh and find new interests. Your body has changed, and as a result, so has your mind. A changed mind often craves fresh forms of fulfillment. Here are some ideas that have helped me. Become a patient rights activist. This may not sound like barrels of fun, but surprisingly, it can be. Fighting for a cause makes you feel you are really doing something that will make a difference. It connects you with a community of like-minded people, and it has the ability to alter your mindset from "woe is me" to "I'm a fighter." What could be more fun than that? One way to start is by becoming informed on healthcare legislation. The Patient's Bill of Rights, prescription drug coverage, insurance reform, changes in the ADA, and SSDI are just a few of the issues. Call a nonprofit group that deals with one that interests you. Try the American Medical Association's Grassroots Action Center, which organizes activists on a number of health-related issues, and there are many locally based groups that lead letter-writing campaigns, rallies, and the like. Spend time with kids. For those of you who don't have children of your own and you want to awaken your sense of spontaneity and playfulness, hang around children. You must have a niece or a nephew you can babysit. Their parents will be more than happy for a break. Looking at the world through fresh young eyes can be a surprising antidote to the sometimes blah-filled days of living with a chronic illness. If you don't know any kids, try volunteering as a tutor, or if you're up for a bigger commitment, as a big brother or sister. The time I spent with the group of teenagers from the Renal Support Network prom is a good example of catching the enthusiasm of the young. I am amazed by these kids' bubbly, positive attitudes. It's so refreshing and uplifting to see 16 and 17-year-olds who genuinely want to better their community. It always brings a sense of joy to my day to be able to talk with them and find out about their lives and interests. Get an animal. I have two dogs, a parrot, and a cat. The unconditional love these pets shower on me has brought immeasurable joy to my life. I can't imagine life without them. It seems like my animals are always happy, and it takes so little to please them. A bone or a pat on the head creates excitement that is so spirit-lifting. The star of my menagerie is my African gray parrot, Johnny. With a vocabulary nearing 300 words, and many of them rather cheeky, Johnny keeps Dean and me, and anyone who visits us, in stitches. If owning an animal seems like too big of a responsibility, why not enjoy small doses by dog or cat sitting? Many humane societies also have companion animal programs that you might want to look into. Get involved in your new community. Almost every community has a strictly social aspect. You may find, as you get involved in your lupus education group, that certain members go bowling every other Saturday. Hook onto that train. If people you've met don't meet socially, try initiating an outing. Sometimes it's easier to mingle with people who face the same set of difficulties you do.
Happiness is a perfume you cannot pour on others without getting a few drops on yourself. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Is having fun really that important? In a word, yes. Placing do something fun on your to-do list and checking it off every day is one of the most crucial actions you can take in creating a chronically happy life. Do not underestimate the importance of pleasure. It can be as vital as following your diet and exercise routines. For instance, research has shown that laughter improves the immune system by lowering stress hormones and increasing the number of lymphocytes that help fight foreign substances in the body. And there is evidence that people who are able to connect socially or who have a positive outlook on life experience improved health. So yes, it is important to put fun right up there with doctor visits. But there are more reasons than improved health to prioritize good times. Pleasure helps shift your focus. For starters, a dose of entertainment can take your mind off your problems. Despite what most counselors say, sometimes denial is a great thing. Take yourself out and pretend, even for a few short minutes, that everything is okay. Go to a movie. Have lunch with your friends. Go to your local coffee shop and immerse yourself in a newspaper. Take time every day to do something small to remove your mind from your body's limitations. As you indulge, actively fight off distressing thoughts by deeply involving yourself in what you were doing at that moment. Returning the movie to the video store can wait. Tell the pain in your back to go away. This is your time, and nothing is going to invade this space. Checking yourself out to relish in some small pleasure can have a tremendous regenerative effect on your soul. Try it. A little frivolity will support your supporters. As you are well aware, you aren't the only one coping with the dailies of a chronic illness. There is someone by your side. Your husband, your mother, your sister, your girlfriend. Who has held your hand through all of this. It is essential that you two connect around something light, something other than your illness. Even a small helping of entertainment can be a boost to your support network. Something as simple as reading a magazine together and then having a lively discussion about the featured article can help realign the focus from your health to a topic more entertaining. If you are having trouble justifying seeking pleasure when you feel this sick, or if you're simply too ill to enjoy yourself at all, try pushing through by thinking of the joy an outing will give your support person. Know your limits, of course. Failing to make fun a priority can have major implications. Mandy Gordon, for example, felt terribly guilty that her husband had to return to work from retirement after she quit her job due to illness. He also had to take over the bulk of the household chores, since Gordon's chronic fatigue syndrome left her unable to exert herself. "I feel like I'm a nuisance to my husband and daughter," Gordon admits. Because of the extra work her husband has taken on, when it comes to having fun, Gordon doesn't feel she's entitled. There's the problem of feelings of guilt, like, "I'm supposed to be ill. I'm not really allowed to have fun, particularly when you're off work long term." Ultimately, however, Gordon says she's learned that denying fun only introduces yet another stress into her life and her marriage. Instead, she focuses on what she can do. "I have tried as much as possible to be upbeat and positive, particularly in front of my husband and daughter. But it's not always possible to keep up the pretense, so there's been a lot of crying, both in private and on their shoulders, and that's sometimes about the guilt. So to deal with it, I try to do one thing each day. Last night, I went to see my 18-year-old daughter in a musical she and her co-students have put on. I've also written a little website for family photos, too. Fun, rewarding, and productive. Pushing past roadblocks to fun. Help! I'm stuck! If you are still having a hard time introducing pleasure in your life, perhaps you are tripping on one of the following stumbling blocks. Are you doing what's fun for you? Funny, it took me a while to realize that I needed to spend my time and energy on doing things I liked to do, as opposed to pursuing other people's passions. As a young adult, I used to play volleyball with my friends a lot. Well, at 4'10", you can imagine that I'm not very good at the game. Despite the disadvantages of stature and interest, I spent many a Friday night playing volleyball because that's what my friends were doing. Now that I have a better understanding of what I enjoy, I realize I would have been better off staying at home doing something for myself and having the group over for dessert after the game. Are you letting pride stop you? Part of coming to grips with having a chronic illness is accepting the unavoidable truth that the world will see the visual cues of your illness. You will be confronted with this reality when you begin socializing. As you reconnect with friends, you don't want to be seen as weak, vulnerable, or different. But there is that pesky little issue of the handicap placard on your front dash flashing like a billboard printed with the words, "I'm broken." Some people take their embarrassment, or pride, to the nth degree, letting it stop them from going out. To this I say, don't be ashamed to use every single resource available to enjoy your life to the fullest. Following are some issues that may be holding you back. Wheelchairs and scooters. Even if you don't need a wheelchair or a scooter all the time, you may want to employ one for a big day out where you know you'll be doing a lot of walking. Let's say you want to take your grandkids to Disneyland, but you know you won't be able to keep up with them. Wouldn't you much rather rent a motorized scooter than miss out on the day altogether? Physical appearance and hair loss. If your physical appearance changes due to your illness, don't let that stop you from having fun. Right before I had my last transplant, I lost most of my hair. What was left looked like baby hair. It was New Year's Eve, and I was planning on staying home, convinced I did not want to go out with my dreadful new hairstyle. A friend of mine, Steve, called me up and said, "I have an extra ticket to a dance. Why don't you meet me there?" I went on and on about how awful I felt about my looks. He countered, "Well, wear a hat or something. Let's go." With his persistence, I agreed. Wig on head, I arrived at the dance and found our table for 10. There was one empty seat left for me. Nice-looking, straight men occupied the other 9. I had the time of my life. I did not sit through one dance, and you know, the wig didn't fall off once. Handicap placards. Applying for and receiving a handicap placard can be emotionally distressing, especially if you don't show signs of being ill. Not only do you have to admit there is a problem, but you may feel like you are advertising your condition to the world. Also, it can be embarrassing when you hop out of the car, healthy-looking, and passers-by throw you looks like, "Why are you in a handicapped spot?" To get over such feelings, I urge you to remember all of the difficult obstacles you had to overcome just to get dressed and get out of the house this morning. You deserve as many breaks as you can get. The government created these signs for a reason. People need them. There is no shame in being ill, just shame in letting pride stop you from getting out. In terms of the stares, take them as a compliment. You look healthy. That's great. Incontinence. Certain disabilities can make it hard to reach the bathroom in time, causing mishaps in public. Although this problem may make you want to never leave the house again, a better solution is to be prepared. Make sure to visit the restroom first thing at every stop you make. Even if you don't have to go, make a trip anyway. If you are still nervous, wear undergarments that will give you some protection. Nowadays, such products are discreet and effective and can give you just the confidence you need to relax and enjoy yourself.
The most wasted day of all is that on which we have not laughed. Sebastian Aran Chamfort.
Remind me how to have fun again? Taking trips and other fun stuff. Now that we've recalled what fun is and why it's important to have it, let's come up with a plan to actually do it. Resist the urge to throw out the baby with the bathwater and tell yourself, for instance, all traveling is out. Some traveling may be off limits, but you might be able to go more places than you think if you take the correct precautions. I travel all over the country, despite a sizable list of health problems. That said, I never jeopardize my well-being, and I am in constant contact with my doctors who are aware of and okay with my schedule. The same is true for other recreational pursuits. You can still do lots of things, just be sure you proceed with caution and know your limits. Traveling. The idea of traveling has always appealed to me, but when I was younger, I rarely went on trips. I was always bound to some form of dialysis treatment, either 3 times a week on hemo or every day with peritoneal. Travel was expensive, too, and I never had much money to spare. These factors made the whole idea feel like too much of a hassle. Then one day, I took a hard look at myself, and I realized I was a bit of a hypocrite. On one hand, I held all of these go-for-it personal convictions. On the other, I was letting my disease stop me from trying something I really wanted to do. After I had that epiphany, I made a vow to get out there and see the world. Go for it. I planned my first trip for one weekend. Any longer and I would have needed to dialyze in foreign surroundings. Too scary. As soon as my Friday dialysis was finished, I headed out, returning in time for my regular Monday appointment. On that first trip, I went to Las Vegas. As I took more jaunts, I became increasingly daring. The most adventurous was a 3-day cruise to Mexico, which left from San Pedro, California on a Friday and sailed to Catalina Island and Ensenada, Mexico, and returned on the following Monday morning. I had a great time. I danced into the wee hours of the morning and saw all the sights during the day. If I can work around dialysis, I believe you can work around whatever it is that's holding you back from traveling. With a little planning and a lot of chutzpah, you can get out there and see the world too. But take it easy. I slowly ramped up to my big cruise, and I advise you do the same. Depending on your level of mobility, I suggest you start with day trips, then work your way up to an overnight, and finally a weekend. With each increment, you'll be able to gauge your comfort level, and you'll learn little tips that will come in handy as your journeys lengthen. Plan ahead. When I took my cruise to Mexico, I rescheduled my regular Monday dialysis treatment for a few hours later than normal, in case there was any kind of delay. Taking these kinds of precautions ensures a smooth journey and eliminates worry. If I had to rush from the ship to my dialysis unit, the last leg of my trip could have been ruined for the worry. Other tips? Check on insurance. A wise thing to do before you leave is to check on your insurance coverage's policy on out-of-town doctor emergency room visits. This way, if an emergency comes up, you'll follow the proper protocol so you won't have to fight the insurance company later. Research accommodation. Educate yourself about where you're going. If you're in a wheelchair, for instance, make a phone call to find out about the hotel's accessibility. Before you leave for your trip, make hotel and restaurant reservations at wheelchair-friendly establishments so you aren't met with unpleasant last-minute surprises. If you need to refrigerate your meds, make sure you call ahead to see if the hotel has in-room refrigerators. If they do not have a refrigerator available, ask if you can store your medication in their refrigerators when you arrive. Or, better yet, make reservations at a hotel that can better accommodate you. Another option is to have someone else do the research for you. This website specializes in coordinating trips for the disabled. Go to www.allaboutdisabledtravel.com. Carefully plot excursions. If walking is an issue, find out about parking at the theater you'll be attending when you're in New Orleans. Will you be able to park close to the theater, or will it be a hike? Find out if the theater has a drop-off point, or if the management company can make special valet parking arrangements for you. If you are going on an all-day outing that will require a lot of walking, you may want to check into wheelchair or scooter rental. Plan day treks that won't exacerbate your shortcomings. If you know stairs are difficult, cross out the part of your trip to New York where you climbed to the top of the Statue of Liberty. Take that time to go to Soho instead. If you are traveling with a group, there is no shame in breaking off and meeting up a couple of hours later. Why frustrate yourself when there are so many amazing things on this planet to see? Leave an itinerary. Let your loved ones know you'll be traveling and leave the hotel phone number and an itinerary. You should also leave your doctor's number and relevant insurance information. Why? If there is an emergency and you are unable to talk, whoever is your in-case-of-an-emergency contact needs to tell the hospital who your doctor is and how to get a hold of her. If you're on a waiting list for an organ transplant, tell the transplant center you'll be traveling and how you can be contacted. Time is of the essence. I happened to be on a camping trip when I got the call. I'm very glad I heeded my own advice. Plane trips. For plane rides, it's important to discover on your own what works for you. I always bring a neck pillow with me so I can rest comfortably, ensuring more energy when I arrive. Having arthritis, I easily become stiff. I try to reserve an aisle seat so I can get up and stretch. My feet don't touch the floor, so I bring a little step stool with me. This helps to reduce the pain in my legs on long flights. Also, I try to stay hydrated by drinking lots of water, and I do not drink any alcohol while flying. Another good tip when traveling by plane is to never pack your meds with luggage you are checking. Always keep them with you in a purse or carry-on. You will arrive at your destination, but your luggage may not, and you don't want to be stuck without critical medication. To avoid the embarrassment of a search, make sure you have a letter from your physician describing why you need the medication. This is very important for diabetics who require syringes and needles. If your medication needs to be refrigerated or stay cool, purchase a thermal insulated lunch bag. These usually provide enough temperature control even on longer plane rides. If you are concerned, you can probably refresh with ice during the flight. Know your limits. Only you know your body. It will tell you when enough is enough. It's very important not to push yourself too far when you are away from home because getting help is so much more difficult. Work with your doctor to know your limits as well. Before you solidify your travel plans, discuss your trip with your healthcare providers. Find out what precautions you need to take or if there are any reasons you shouldn't go. Be sure you mention where you are going because the destination could alter your physician's treatment choices. If you are headed to the Mile High City, for instance, and you are a borderline anemic, your doctor may need to prescribe medication to increase your red blood cell count so you can breathe easier in the high altitude. Eating out. Even if you are on a restricted diet, eating out can still be a great experience. You just have to be a little more careful. and willing to make your server really work for his tip. Be specific in your instructions. Explain carefully to the waiter that you have a health condition that prevents you from eating salt and that you can't have any, I mean any, on your potatoes. Ask for a list of ingredients. If you know precisely what you are eating, you can better regulate. If the dish you love contains an off-limit ingredient, ask if the chef can prepare it without. Ask for an off-the-menu meal. If you don't see anything you can eat on the menu, ask if the kitchen can make the meal you prefer. More often than not, kitchens can handle special orders. Most people just don't know to ask. Don't be afraid to send a meal back. If you've made your request for no salt very plain and you get a dish with salt on it, send it back. You are the customer, and it shouldn't be any problem for the server and the chef to meet your requirements. Be careful when eating out. Don't use the fact that you're at a restaurant as an excuse to go off your diet. This is critical if you take clients out to lunch or are on the road a lot with work. If a quarter of your meals are in restaurants and every time you order you give yourself license to indulge, next thing you know, you are out of compliance. If you must have the no-no, satisfy your craving by taking a small sampler bite. Staying in. I don't think I need to say much about this because we all know how to stay in. All of us may not, however, make the most of those homebound nights. When was the last time you had a game night with your buddies? Never? Give it a try. It's fun. Here are a few ideas of things you can do with your friends at home. Have a poker night. This is fun and easy. You order the pizza and provide the cards, and everyone else brings the poker chips or coins. The dealer gets to name the game. The longer the night goes, the crazier the games get. Forget about five-card stud. Try seven-card draw. One-eyed Jack's wild. No peeky. Organize a themed potluck. Two ideas. Grandma's favorite casseroles or just soufflés. Host an old-fashioned tea. Make everyone wear hats and gloves and serve little sandwiches, scones, and shortbread. Throw seasonal parties. Have all your friends come over dressed up for Halloween and pass out candy to little ones. Host an Oscar party or a Miss America party. It's fun to eat chips and dip and make fun of all the dolled-up celebrities. Of course, fun doesn't have to mean there's a gaggle of people in your home. It can be as simple as hanging out by yourself or with your partner, watching television or a video, or, my favorite, surfing the net. Exercise and sports. If you think your sporting days are over, think again. There are many organizations for athletes with disabilities. You never know what's out there until you check into it. The Paralympic Games, Athletes with Disabilities Victory Games, and the Wheelchair Games are just a few. My favorite, though, because I'm often a competitor, is the World Transplant Games. Participating in such organized events is fun with a capital F, and it has the added benefit of connecting you with like-minded people who are daring to stay active despite their illnesses. Danielle Campos' story. Participating in group sports can be rewarding not only physically, but socially as well. For competitive swimmer Danielle Campo, getting in the water liberates her from the body aches caused by muscular dystrophy and boosts her confidence.
I always feel like I have this sense of freedom. I feel like in the water I've never had any limits to what I can and can't do, she explains.
Campo represented Canada in the 2000 Paralympic Games in Sydney, Australia. She won 4 medals, 3 gold and 1 silver. She also set a new world record in 2 individual races. She was only 15 at the time. During the regular season, Campo trains with an able-bodied competitive swimming group. She vividly remembers one of her first meets, the point at which everyone realized she had an iron will and a future in competitive swimming, despite her disability.
Her inspirational story is recounted on the Trans-Canada Rally for Muscular Dystrophy website. She was 7 and entered a 100-meter event. Olympic-sized pools in which all serious swim meets take place are 25 meters in length, so Danielle's race demanded 4 lengths of the pool. The only complication was that she had never swum any distance greater than a single length. With only her daughter's best interest at heart, Danielle's mother told one of the pool officials that they would have to help Danielle out of the pool after the first length of the race. At the end of 2 lengths, a coach came over to get her out, but Danielle refused. When she finally touched the wall at the end of the 4th length, after more than 6 minutes, the longest time for that event in the history of the meet, exhausted and dead last, she was also thrilled. "I reached my goal. I finished." Although she had been in the pool alone for the past several minutes, Danielle had swum 4 times longer than she ever had.
Mountains cannot be surmounted except by winding paths. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe.
Swimming with the dolphins. A lifelong dream realized. Of all the animals on the planet, none understands playing more than dolphins. My entire life, I've looked to them as a source of inspiration, as a reminder that every day we have to laugh, to sing, to dance, to somehow experience the joy of living. I've always wanted to dive in the water and experience their world firsthand. As a 2-year celebration of my kidney transplant, that's exactly what I did. I headed to Key Largo, Florida, where a company actually lets you hop in the lagoon and splash around with real dolphins. After I suited up, the trainer sat me down on the dock, my snorkel, mask, and fins in place, and gave me a brief overview of the do's and don'ts. Then she instructed me, "Be sure to lock eye contact with them." My heart was beating fast. I was a little nervous. These dolphins were larger than Flipper, but I took the risk and dove in. Before I knew it, Dingy, with her endless smile, was directly under me, eye to eye. She did a complete roll and disappeared. When I looked to my right, there she was, waiting for me to grab onto her. As I reached for her dorsal fin, she started to glide through the water. She increased speed, and the waves sloshed me in the face. It was exhilarating. We circled the lagoon 3 times, and then she dropped me off by the dock. Moments later, the dominant female, Jean, picked me up. She was more aggressive and tested my abilities. She loved to dive, taking me down about 4 feet each time. I was able to hold on at first, but I started laughing and swallowed a lot of water and had to let go. I found myself quite a distance from the dock, alone, treading water and breathing heavily. Jean came up beneath me, just enough so I was able to sit on her. There I was, in the middle of the lagoon, resting on a dolphin. Of the 3 people in the lagoon that day, the 4 dolphins only interacted with me. I wondered if the dolphins could sense the staples from all my surgeries. Maybe, in their unique view, I lit up like a Christmas tree. To this day, I don't know if that was it, or if they actually understood that when I dove into their lagoon, swimming with them wasn't just a lark for me. I could actually feel the peace, serenity, and joyfulness of their undersea world. The experience gave me pause and a chance to reflect on the many peaks and valleys I had traveled on my journey with chronic illness. And I realized that I had many miles, many fun-filled miles to go. Don't forget to laugh. Especially at yourself. Okay, Here's another one about me. I received an award for patient advocacy a few years ago from the Independent Living Center of Southern California. A representative there presented me with a congressional flag and informed me that it had been flown over our nation's capital. Later that evening, I grumbled to Dean, "You know, I'm not all that impressed that they took a bunch of flags and tossed them into an airplane and flew them over the Capitol building." My husband patiently explained, "No, honey, the flags were flown on a flagpole above the Capitol." Diamonds are more interesting than paper. One time, I asked a woman what she did, and she replied, "I'm a dialysis patient." This was at the top of her list. I asked her if she had children, and she replied, "Why, yes, even grandchildren." I asked her if she babysat her grandchildren, and she said, "All the time." This woman was many things: wife, mother, homemaker, grandma, cook, babysitter, avid reader. Dialysis patient should have been way down on her list. If you notice that you've been defining yourself primarily on your health, it's time for you to get out and have some fun. You are a diamond that has many sides. The more you develop each of those facets, the happier and more interesting you will become. Lori's Toolbox 9. A mallet. Smash the barriers to fun. Perhaps fun is eluding you because you aren't able to get over the idea that you can't do the things you used to do. "If I can't go rock climbing, nothing is worth doing," you think. If this is your situation, I challenge you to probe the real reasons you aren't letting yourself get out into the world again. Make a list called Barriers to Fun. In one column write, "I can't because," and in the other write, "I can because." Write down every single blockade you can dream up. "I don't feel well. I'm too tired. I don't have any friends anymore." Go ahead, get it all out on paper. Then, in the "I can" column, counter yourself. As you create your list, you'll notice there will be obstacles you won't be able to knock down. Set those aside for now. Why worry about something you can't do anything about? Instead, think about the ones you can do something about, then work to make the change. Here's my list. Lori's barriers to fun. I can't because I'm tired. I can because I can honor my body and take time to rest. I can challenge myself to use the acting as if concept. I can know the difference between the time to push and the time to be still. I can't because I'm in pain. I can because I can seek some relief through massage and mental exercises. I can't because I don't have money. I can because I can watch the sunset, curl up with Dean, and laugh at Johnny. I can't because I've got tons to do. I can because laundry can wait, life cannot. I can't because I'm scared. I can because what's the worst that can happen? Maybe it's not really living because I'm too afraid to take risks. The must-haves. To date, I have been to 48 states. I travel for work even when I don't feel my best. I have an added advantage in that I can fall asleep before the plane takes off. I developed this skill after years of sleeping in hospitals in spite of all the noise. As a veteran traveler, I have learned how to navigate airports, maps, and foreign surroundings. I've also learned to pack certain essentials in case anything goes wrong. I take these things with me every time I get on a plane. pagers, and cell phones. If you don't have either of these, I highly suggest you get one or both. Cell phones and pagers have become necessities nowadays, especially if you are more likely to be met with an emergency situation. Call ahead to find out if coverage will reach your planned destination, and if it doesn't, make appropriate arrangements. Medication. Don't leave your meds at home. Make sure you keep them accessible and you take extra along in case you lose your planned for dosages, your plane is canceled, or you need to extend your stay. I suggest keeping the extra in a separate bag so if your carry-on is stolen, heaven forbid, all your medications aren't gone with it. Meds and allergies list. In your purse or wallet, keep a list of your medications, including dosages and schedule. List any allergies you may have, including medications and foods. Contact info list. It's important emergency care workers can find out how to help you. In your wallet, carry the number of your emergency contact, your doctor's phone number, and your insurance membership number. If your condition requires it, don't forget to wear your medical alert bracelet, the best way of communicating your health problems when you aren't able to. Of pine trees and peritoneal dialysis. When I was on peritoneal dialysis, some friends invited me to go camping. This kind of traveling sounded good from a financial perspective, but I thought it would be out of the question. Curious, I asked my nurse anyway, is it safe to perform peritoneal dialysis while camping? Surprisingly, she assured me that if I had a closed environment and a means by which to wash my hands, I should be fine. So off I went. I did my exchanges in the car, which was parked near our beautiful campsite in Joshua Tree National Park. The weather was pleasant and sunny, so I didn't have to worry about warming the bags. Relying on the efficiency of solar power, I laid the PD bags on the dashboard. The first time I did an exchange, I took extra time and was extremely careful. Once I had the hang of it, it was a piece of cake. From that time on, I went camping whenever I had the chance. What might you do that you didn't think was possible? Never store extra medication in your car. Remember, your car in the summer heats to astronomical temperatures, potentially making your medication ineffective. The World Transplant Games. By 1997, I'd won 3 medals in table tennis at the U.S. Transplant Games, and for my honeymoon, Dean and I decided that we should head to Australia for the World Transplant Games so I could claim another piece of hardware. 51 countries and nearly 1,200 athletes participated in the games that year. Out of all those countries, guess which one I drew to play first? The all-time leader in my event, Japan. I won one game, and my competitors clobbered me in the other two. My dream of a medal was shot. But I wasn't too bothered. The pressure was off, and the real fun, hanging out with the other athletes, could begin. Just like everywhere else in the world, there are cliques at the games. Typically, the hearts hang in one corner, the livers in another, and the kidneys dominate the field. The kidneys have a favorite break the ice question. Where did you get your transplant, living or cadaver? This year, I was determined to mingle out of my group. I made my way to the hearts and asked a transplant recipient, "Where did you get your transplant, living or cadaver?" He wanted to know what kind of medication I was on. See, you can't get a heart or a lung from a living donor. Unlike a single kidney, the donor really needs it. I was soon to learn, though, my question was valid. Also competing at the games were Jose Lopez and Keith Webb. 7 years earlier, doctors had determined that Lopez had an incurable disease and would need his lungs replaced. In simultaneous operations, Lopez gave his heart to Webb and received a heart-lung transplant from a woman killed in a car accident. Now, both in their 50s, they were competing against each other in a 5-kilometer race. Neither of them won, but if one had, I wanted to know, who would have gotten the medal? The Four Principles of Chronically Happy Living. In previous chapters, we've explored strategies to manage life with a chronic illness. There is a difference, however, between managing your life and joyfully living your life. In this next section, you'll learn four principles that will help you shape a chronically happy existence, one where you are no longer driven by pain and frustration of your disease, but by the determination of your healthy inner will.